From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
It's the State of Combat podcast on CBS Sports with your boy, the Brian Campbell. Special edition, though, to help you through this quarantine life. We got the Hall of Famer, Sugar Rashad Evans, and we got episode 2 of our new series, Story Time with Rashad, called Bursting on the Scene. So let me bring in that fella right now. You know him. He's an earthquake survivor. All that great stuff.
That's me bringing that heat.
He's about to bring that heat. Sugar, Rashad, we're going back in the archives of your career, painstakingly, moment by moment. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Trying to keep my son out of here, man. He's seeing a new area. Now he wants to come through and investigate. But I'm good, BC, man. At home, just enjoying another day of quarantine.
All right. Well, we got great feedback, Rashad, from our last Story Time episode, going deep on all things Ultimate Fighter. You talk about peeing your pants during the Brad Imes fight, but nobody noticed, you know? Hopefully, we got a lot of good ones today. Hopefully, all of our listeners out there are doing well. Love bringing this bonus audio to you. And Rashad, today, we are going to break down 4 consecutive fights, the 4 that immediately followed your victory in the Ultimate Fighter Season 2 heavyweight tournament. You dropped down to 205, and we're talking about Sam Hoger, Stefan Bonner, Jason Lambert, Sean Salmon. And these took place from November 2005 to September 2006. Not even a full year, Rashad. You're packing in 4 fights. It seems to me like this was, we got to hit the ground running. We're the Ultimate Fighter champion. We're training with Jackson Wink. We got to find out how great this guy can be.
Yeah, when I first got on the scene, I wanted to get out there and I wanted to prove that I really belong, you know, and Stefan Bonner and Forrest Griffin, they kind of set the standard of what was expected out of an Ultimate Fighter. So, you know, in my mind, I was like, I got to be on a level because I believe that I was as good as those guys. So when I started training at Michigan, I knew that my game needed to evolve and get to another level. So that's when I linked up with Keith Jardine. He was like, hey, you got to come out to Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I went out there. And, you know, it was kind of a cool experience, but there was absolutely nothing to do in Albuquerque. And I was coming from the Chicago area, Midwest area, where, you know, there's pretty much a lot to do. But, you know, in Albuquerque, Mexico, there's nothing to do.
Yeah.
So it made for a great training place, you know. And, you know, that's where I really started to dig my teeth into my training and just develop that mindset, you know, that mindset that Greg Jackson became really famous for.
Let's set the stage here in 2005 for this 4-fight stretch. You're 26 years old. We talked at the end of the last Storytime episode about how much winning tough changed your life. You really went from, you know, maybe big time future potential star fighter, Hall of Famer, all that, you know, to, oh yeah, let's get in the driver's seat. This career's for real. 26, you're 6-0 as a fighter. You moved to New Mexico. Did you feel pressure? Were you excited? Did you feel like a badass? You're about to cut down to 205. What is sort of the mindset at this point?
I felt like a badass, man. I wanted to test myself more than anything. I wanted to make sure that, you know, I believed that I was tough, but I was like, I want to see how tough I was compared to those guys that I was looking up to on TV. And now that I have my chance to cut my teeth against some of the best guys and baddest guys on the planet. So each and every single day in camp, I grew more and more confident because of the things that Greg Jackson put us through. You know, Greg would do some crazy things, and now it'd be like abuse, But back then, it was just what we did for mental toughness. Like Greg would do some crazy stuff. Like he'll have us do buddy carries where I'm holding Keith Jardine like he's my wife, and I'm walking through the walking over the broom, you know, to wedding. And yeah, so I'm walking, and I'm holding Keith like that, and it's every 60 steps we got to change, and he holds me like that. But the thing is that we're in the mountains. We're way up, like 8,000 feet up. Damn. We're on the edge of a cliff, and it's like no room for error. Like if you fall, you're going to fall to your death. And like almost after a few like scary situations, Greg was like, oh, let's switch it up and let's do something different. Why don't you get on Keith's back? Why don't Keith get on your back? But that's the kind of thing that Greg had us doing. He had us on that mindset where we were willing to face death in order to get better, because in the cage, you had to be willing to die in there if you wanted to outlast your opponent.
Wow. Wow. That's intense. I love that. Quick question. You mentioned basically becoming brothers and training partners with Keith Jardine. You had faced him during the Ultimate Fighter season, and I thought that was the best fight of that entire season. Was it hard to just, you know, put that down and become brothers again? Or was it a thing where you needled him through the years that you always got the better of him?
Yeah, you know, I fed off of Keith and we fed off each other. You know, we had a really good symbiotic relationship, and you know, he was good in areas where I was weak at and vice versa. So we really worked really good together. And, you know, it just kind of happened that even in our careers as it followed, he would either fight somebody before I did, or I either fight somebody before he did. And we'll end up actually fighting the same person twice, because he'll help me get ready for that person and I'll help him get ready for that person. So we have two camps of experience working on the same person. So we had that good relationship, and it was something where I could be vulnerable with him in training practice, meaning the fact that, you know, I can try different moves and not be afraid to lose and not be afraid to get caught in a submission and not be afraid to get caught with a punch, because I knew at the end of the day, if it was ever a position where it was not in my best interest, he wouldn't look for the finish. He wouldn't look to pile on damage. And that's what you need when you're going with somebody and you're pushing yourself to that level. And Keith was that guy for me.
All right. So there was never a point where he said, okay, I've been your brother. I didn't expose you. I helped you build. You helped me build. We're great fighters. But let's empty everyone out of the gym. Let's have a Rocky Apollo rematch. Just you and I. Ding, ding. I'm going to show you who's best. Did you ever get to that point with him?
Oh, I mean, we've definitely had our knockdown, drag out sparring matches, and that was pretty much every single time that we sparred. But that's what was expected, you know. There's a couple times Keith knocked me out in practice one time. He caught me with you know how Keith used to always have that blistering left foot combo. He starts it off and he's like the Tasmanian devil. Well, he caught me in that with a left hook one time, and it knocked me out on my feet, and that was like the first time I ever really got stunned or dazed in anything. It was by Keith in training. But that was the kind of training atmosphere that we were, you know, we were putting ourselves into. We were trying to defeat each other in practice, but at the same time, not kill each other.
Absolutely. So this four-fight stretch that we're going to break down today, we call it bursting on the scene. You want to talk about growth in a four-fight stretch. You start off, you're the Ultimate Fighter heavyweight champion, but you're raw. We'll get into this here. You're very raw. You're athletic and explosive and all that, but you're learning on the job at the end of this four-fight stretch, Rashad. And let me remind you, you did four fights in 294 days. You were ready for all the smoke. The fights that you had after this four-fight stretch in order, Tito Ortiz, Michael Bisping, Chuck Liddell, Forrest Griffin. So you kind of went from, you know, zero to hero in terms of experience and growth. Even your body, really, by the end of this four-fight stretch, you look like championship-level fighter. What was that 1 year like, man? You were in the meat grinder.
Yeah, it was a year where I just put everything into it, and I really started to believe in the fact that I could do this. And that's when I started to transfer my mind from being just the guy who competed on the Ultimate Fighter show to the guy who actually started to believe that I can really compete in a light heavyweight division and maybe even be champion, you know. And that's where I was like, that's when I started to see my size as not too much of a disadvantage, and I seen it more as an advantage. And I started to really see the attributes that I had, and working with guys like Greg Jackson and being able to work alongside Keith Jardine and all these guys with a wealth of experience, and Michael Van Arsdale, and being able to work with these guys with a wealth of experience, but being able to hang with those guys with wealth of experience with all these different disciplines, it gave me a lot of confidence. And you've seen that every single fight, I would just get more and more skills along the way. Like one fight, I get caught in a situation that I almost get finished in. And then the next fight, that same exact situation comes up. And then you see me just learning and how to deal with those positions that previously in other fights I struggled with.
It's crazy. It's crazy to watch the growth. Final question before we get into these fights and break them down. At the end of The Ultimate Fighter and that championship interview, you said, look, I think 205 is much better for me. What was that process like? Because you were basically putting on weight to be a heavyweight. Was it much of a weight cut to get in, to get down to 205 for these fights?
No, it really wasn't much of a weight cut at all. You know, honestly speaking, you know, I really had to eat my way to be a heavyweight, and just to stay around 230 and to step in the cage around 225, it was like I was gluttonous the whole time. And that's not really a good way you want to fight, because you feel fat and you feel bloated. You know, you want to be in your most ripped position or ripped feeling when you get out and fight. So when I started to naturally go through a camp, and then I had to do like a little meal cut or a little weight, little wrestler cut, I was at the perfect weight, and I was like, this is the perfect weight for me. Now, before all of this happened, I was really a 185 pounder who bulked up to 205 and then bulked up to heavyweight. So I was way out of my weight class.
I love it. I love it. And we'll see in the size disparities and even these first few fights that exposed it. One more additional detail. They mentioned multiple times in these next 2, 3, 4 fights that you're not that far removed from being a hospital security guard in Michigan. So you win The Ultimate Fighter in November 2005. This first fight against Sam Holger is April 2006. When did you stop being a security guard and go full-time all in New Mexico?
I left being a security guard when right before the Stephen Bonner camp. So it was right before the Stephen Bonner camp, I decided that actually, it was directly after the Stephen Bonner camp, I decided that I would have to do give up being a security guard, because I had to, that was my first real camp that I had to be away at on a consistent basis. So at that point, I was like, I can't be a security guard no more.
That's a moment. That's a, hey, you know what? I'm a professional.
I'm growing up. Yeah, I'm growing up, because at that time, when I got off the Ultimate Fighter show, I'll never forget this. The woman who was my mother-in-law, she ends up saying to me, she says, okay, Rashad, now you done that. Now you can get a real job now. But I mean, I didn't take offense to it, because that was the thinking back then. Like, it was like fighting was not a real job.
Very interesting. All right. We're going to get into these fights, starting with Sam Holger, after we take a quick pause for the cause. We'll be back right after this. Yeah.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, and we're back. BC, Sugar Rashad, it's story time. Episode 2, bursting on the scene. And Rashad, we start off right away. You win The Ultimate Fighter. You get into a professional training camp. And on April 6th, 2006, UFC Fight Night 4. Wow, take me back. It's the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, Las Vegas, the site of your Ultimate Fighter victory over Brad Imes. You're back in your home here. Co-main event, the main event that night, Stephen Bonner versus Keith Jardine, your opponents of past and future. What did you know about this big fella, the Alaskan assassin Sam Hoger, coming into this fight?
Well, I kind of had experience with Sam Hoger because when I was coming up in the underground circuit, I would go up to Pat Miletich's gym and I would train with those guys, and they would do like some crazy thing where if you wanted to train with them as a journeyman, you had to prove that you were tough. So what they would do is they would have you come in and they would run a round robin on you. And that means everyone would come in and just pretty much just take turns, you know, rotating in on you and seeing if you can stop them from either taking you down, or you got to take them down, or getting up, or whatever that drill specific was. So I ended up going against Sam Hoger when I trained at Pat Miletich's gym. Ooh. And he got the better of me then.
Ooh. And he caught me. His confidence had to be high.
Yeah, it was really high. So he had the experience of knowing that he already went against me, and he submitted me. And here's the thing about it. At the time, I was a little tired, but at the end of the day, you can't really – if you take a whooping in practice, you just got to own it. Like, that's the best thing for a whooping in practice. Like, there's been many times I got beat by guys who are absolutely trash, but the more I accept it, the better I'm able to get over it and then come back better the next day. So Sam took it to me that damn practice. So going into this fight, he had that on his mind.
Wow. So you're 26 years old. You're 6-0 right off the Tough Championship. Hoger is 25 years old. He's 6-1. He had lost to Stephen Bonner as his only pro defeat, and he was an alumni of the Ultimate Fighter Season 1, having defeated Bobby Southworth on that finale card. He's 6'3". You're 5'11". He's got a 5-inch reach advantage. Rashad, another mountain to climb here. Another big man. Like the Tough season all over again.
Yeah, it was, man. And, you know, fortunately for me, you know, he was a big guy, but coming from where I was coming from, he just seemed like a pretty good size for me. You know, he didn't really seem to be that big, but he did have a build that gave me kind of problem because, you know, when guys are built like Sam, like he was long and kind of lanky, and he wasn't really like physically strong, but he had a lanky kind of strength that made him very difficult and kind of dangerous to deal with for me at the time.
All right. Here's some sound heading into this fight.
I'm anticipating probably a submission if we go to the ground, assuming we go to the ground. But if we don't go to the ground standing up, hopefully I'll be able to finish him with a knockout.
Sam Hoger rocking the goatee, the sprout of hair on the edge of the point of his chin. I think I had that in 98, and I'll just remind everyone, I was not touching any women in 1998 while I employed that. I don't know much about Sam Hoger, but here's Rashad on his opponent that night. Whoa, hang in there.
He's slick on the ground. He's got some craftiness on the ground, but at the same time, I think that I can neutralize him with some...
Oh, wow. Sound cut out there, but Rashad, no mention on the broadcast that you guys had sparred, that you know each other, that there's history there. I mean, you're coming in as a potential, you know, marketable fighter for UFC, fresh off that victory. They are, though, on the broadcast, very much replaying your narrative from Tough, that coming in, you were one of the guys that they thought would be the worst. Each step of the way, you won them over. You had the big feud with Coach Matt Hughes. So I wonder what UFC's opinion was of you at that time. Whether they, I mean, no one knows you're going to become a champion and Hall of Famer.
Well, I don't think it was really that high. And I can kind of tell when I rewatch the broadcast and I can kind of hear the remarks that Joe Rogan makes and those guys make, you know, they don't really give me a lot of credit for anything really, except for being athletic and explosive. You know, that was pretty much the narrative on my skill set at that point. I only won because I was explosive and athletic. It was nothing to do with any skill. It was just athletic and explosive.
Well, we start round one. We touch gloves. Hoger, very confident, gangly. You heard what he said about his skills on the ground game. He thinks he can expose you and submit you. Now we know there's a little bit of a backstory of him having handled you. And Rashad, just 12 seconds into this fight. Wow.
Slip to the side of the head. Oh, there's the high kick, Joe. Rashad looks very good, slimmed down at 205. Much more natural weight for Rashad Evans.
Yeah, I like the way he grabbed that leg.
Well, while Joe Rogan and Mike Goldberg were we're a big fan of you slimming down. I think you got Stockton slapped off the start of this fight, Rashad. What happened?
Yeah, he, you know, Sam kind of surprised me a little bit because he came out a little bit aggressive, and I knew what I wanted to do. And here's the thing about it. Like, so back in the day, I wasn't able to see because I used to have to wear glasses, but I would wear contacts. But when I wear contacts, they would disrupt me. So I wouldn't be able to, like, if I was fighting and they got knocked out, I would totally lose my focus and try to find my contact and lose my mind off the fight. So I was like, you know what, for this fight, I'm not going to wear any contacts. So I go into the fight and I can't see Sam as good as I like to see him. So the range is kind of off. You know what I'm saying? So,
well, he woke you up with, is that when you're in a fight and a guy slapped you and it's not, you know, Nick Diaz, is that like a disrespect thing? Are you like, did he just bitch slap me? Like,
yeah, I mean, it is. It is. You get mad about it. And it's kind of at that point, you're like, oh, that's how we plan it. And then you kind of want to just like, you want to get your hit back. And sometimes when you want to get your hit back, you think about your hit so much, you're not thinking about your defense at all. And that's when you're open.
Well, he followed up that slap with a kick attempt, as you heard on that call. You take him down with ease. But what began a theme for this fight, referee Mario Yamasaki standing you up fairly quickly. Would you say that your rawness, you could take people down, you're a Michigan State decorated wrestler, but it wasn't there yet to be able to get guys in position to either ground and pound or submit them? Or was Hoger just defensively sound down there?
Well, yeah, it was a bit of that. It was a lot of, you know, I was really raw on the ground, but at the same time, Sam Hoger was really, really good on the ground. Like, he was a really good jiu-jitsu practitioner. Even now, he's really good. So, like, what I did wrong was I kept my hands on the mat. And because when I started to punch, I started from my hands being on the mat. About time I returned him and got to a position to punch it, he was able to re-grab my arms again and gum them up again. And that's when I didn't really understand where I needed to have my hands in correlation to being able to punch and posture and inflict damage.
All right. Well, you got up after the stand-up and you started to let your hands go. And this was the Rashad that we saw mature during the end of that Ultimate Fighter season. You land a 2-3-piece, maybe 4 on him.
Teeing off with strikes with Rashad Evans. Caught Hoger on a couple of occasions there.
It was nice right hands by Rashad, and also very good takedown defense.
Look how explosive Rashad is at 205. And he was more explosive, even as an undersized heavyweight, than perhaps a Brad Imes, but he's very, very explosive, able to be in total control at this weight, Joe.
Yeah,
Mike, a big fan of your body at 205 throughout this entire broadcast. Mike Goldberg there. But you start to get in a good rhythm, it seemed, here in round one, and that leads to more takedowns. I feel like this was the easiest I've ever seen you take a fighter down. It was like anytime you shoot, this guy's on his back, Rashad.
Yeah, it was, man. Like it's weird because like now guys fight it a little bit, but back then it was kind of weird. He played the jiu-jitsu game so much, and that's why he was so good off his back, because in those days, guys were winning fights off their back. So back then, there was a heavy influence to get guys to get in your guard and then play, you know, the shooting triangle game or catch him in some kind of kimura off the back or whatnot. So he had a pretty good off the bottom game. So that's why he was so easy to take down.
You took him down 2 more times in that final minute, which seemed to secure the round. And then a little wildness in the end when you lose your mouthpiece.
Mario Yamasaki is going to break him up and replace the mouthpiece of Rashad Evans.
Yeah, he caught me with a shot.
Here we go. They're right back in his mouth.
Absolutely. I don't need any water. 10-second rule, just like you do with your kids. Candy's not sure. You have it down there 10 seconds. Nice left.
Mike, it's called the 5-second rule. Okay, I don't know where you're from, but you know, something hits the ground, you can blow it off after 5 seconds. 10 seconds, you got a little bit of cooties on there. But Rashad, you put that mouthpiece right back in, and you were ready to go.
Yeah, I was, man. Because here's the thing, man. At that point, he caught me with a punch, and at that point, I was like halfway, like a little bit, like okay, you know, when you get caught with a pretty good punch, it gives a nice zing to you. And at the same time, I was mad that he caught me with it. So I'm just like, oh, okay, this was on. Okay. Let's get it.
Well, it's key because this fight ended up being very close on the scorecards. How did you feel after round one? It seemed to me like that's a clear Rashad round.
I felt good. I felt like that was going to be all day. I felt like he really didn't have anything for me on his feet. You know, he kept backing up. I was kind of careful. He was a little bit rangy, but that's why I kept in his face and I didn't give him any space.
Well, he did start to show a little bit of striking to start round two. Sam Holger comes out swinging, big knee to the face as you sort of change levels, and then he comes back. I'm sorry, knee to the midsection, and then he comes back with an elbow to the face. I don't know, Rashad. It looked like you weren't hurt, but you felt it. You felt it. You knew he was there.
Yeah, I did felt it because that knee just kind of slipped up out of nowhere. That knee just kind of like just shot up, and at that point, I was like, because. Once sometimes when you get in a fight, you get an autopilot because it just gets so good and you get into your groove. And the way I fight with a rhythm. So when you fight with a rhythm, you just start to get into your rhythm. And then when something comes and disrupts it, it becomes like, oh, I gotta watch out for that.
Well, that woke you up. You land an instant takedown. Yamasaki stands you up quick as you were unable to really get any ground to pound going. You start to mix in some shots a minute in, landed some more punches. And then it's all level change takedown, level change takedown. And you kind of close this off entering the final minute of the round with a giant slam. Rashad, at this point, I'm like, he's about to be up 2-0. I mean, you're slamming this 6'3" fella. And then you get into a little bit of trouble in the final 10 seconds of the round.
What we see in Rashad is a very explosive athlete. He's got very quick punches and excellent takedowns, good ground control. Missing is a submission game. That's what he's missing. He's missing passing and submitting. Well, that's what he's working on in Albuquerque every day with Greg Jackson. And those great camps work on it. Kimura by Sam Holger. It's deep. All right, he's got full guard. Not much time. Not much time at all. Will he get it before the horn? He might get it. No, he has to. We will be back.
Moving back
out.
Oh, man. That was legitimately dramatic there. 10 seconds, you're holding on for dear life.
I was, and it was really the first time that I really, like, got scared in a fight because it felt like I was in control, and that's the weird thing about a submission. Like, you don't really feel like you've lost position and feel like it's really getting bad until it's already too late. And that's what I was already starting. I was feeling like, oh, man, it's already getting to the point where it's too late for me to save myself. And then that horn sounded, and I was like, yes.
Well, look, they were kind of laying in the criticism there about, look, Rashad's taking this guy down at will, but doesn't have the experience yet to be able to do anything with it. And then he slips you right in that. So it sort of doubled down on that. That had to be enough to take the round, which is kind of crazy because – Holger lands some strikes in that opening minute that we talked about, but you just dominated the rest of that round. Slam, takedown, slam, takedown, two-piece. Do you think the judges were able to give him just for that one moment there, that 10 seconds?
I honestly don't see that, like, being a reason why they can give him the whole round. I mean, he was able to – see, the thing about it was he wasn't even able to clear position totally and show control because at the time when he was gaining position, the bell rang. I can understand if he ended the round as if like he was working on at Kimura and like 5 seconds left, then I was able to, then they sounded the bell. But at that point, it was still too early to say how dangerous it was or not. Only I know. Only I can tell you right now how scared I was. They don't know that. They're not in my mind.
All right. How many more seconds would he have needed to either get the tap or the snap?
It all depends on how much room I would have got after I rolled over. I tell you, I rolled over because I got scared. And when you have to roll over, that's when you get scared. But a lot can happen in that transition. Like when I hop over, he still has to follow me. And if he doesn't follow me smoothly and there's any room, then I'm going to squirm out.
At this point in your career, what's your mindset on that whole idea, tap or snap? Because it's almost like a point of pride for the great Brazilian jiu-jitsus out there who are like, you know, go ahead, break that. I'm still fighting. You know what I mean? Would you have succumbed and tapped? I mean, is that a responsible mindset to be like, I don't care if you break my arm, I'm not tapping.
I wasn't going to tap. He was going to have to break it because at that point, it was just like, it was just so ingrained in my mind that I couldn't lose, you know, and I didn't believe even when I was in that position that I was going to lose. So I would probably let it snap.
Wow. All right. We head into round three. It's going to, as we said, it's the judges could have been split entering here. Sam Holker, you got to give him a little bit of credit here. Head kick off the start.
Oh my God.
You eat it.
Oh my God.
But your right eye is not only swollen, but I don't know if it's from your nose, but that seemed to rock you straight up. I know you got the takedown immediately after, which is full credit to you. How hurt were you from that kick?
I'm going to tell you right now, I've fought in a lot of fights, and that was the first time that I've ever instantly felt pain in the fight. Like, at that moment, it wasn't like, I'm going to wait until later on, this is going to hurt later on. It felt instantly. It hit me, and it hit like a nerve that went all the way down to my feet, and then, like, all to my head, and it just kind of, like, it froze me. It froze me to a point where I just reached and grabbed them, and when I grabbed them and I was able to get them down, I just held on them for dear life because I'm just like, what in the hell was that? Because you know I couldn't see. Like I remember I said I really couldn't see. My vision was impaired. So I seen a jab come, and then I pulled back, and then I didn't see the kick at all. And then only last thing I seen was a referee in the corner of my eye. So at that point, I'm like, oh, shit, did the referee hit me? You know, is the referee jumping in on this or what?
This is why I love going through this journey, because we're literally watching you grow as a fighter, not only overcoming some of your lack of experience, really. I mean, to have the layers of knowing how to move this position into here or get out of this. You're just learning on the job. And then here you're legitimately hurt, yet to your credit, you're continuously taking him down. You're able to neutralize that pain. You're able to, despite the swelling and the bleeding, but what would become a potential problem on the scorecards, you're just unable to do anything when you take him down, and Yamasaki standing you up at will. Do you feel like all of those stand-ups were fair?
No, because I felt like they didn't give me a chance to work. I felt like if it was nowadays, you know, you have guys like Khabib who implement a game like mine and now they would be more a little bit lenient to it, because with a guy who's so good on the ground, it's really hard to have the instant kind of success once you take the guy down and start passing his guard, because the guy's good. Like, he's been training to not allow you to do that. So how are you going to expect immediate results when you get on the ground? You know, it's kind of unfair.
All right, we entered this last couple of minutes. Fight feels like it's up for grab. Some good scrambles by you, but Holger slips in one more knee to the face, and it seemed to hit you directly in that swollen right eye.
Oh, nice knee. Rashad's right eye is closing up. Straight kicks. Those kicks,
yeah,
definitive advantage for Holger.
That one kick, the shin that landed to Rashad's eye, is causing him to swell up. Then again, Rashad gets the takedown again.
That's the story of the fight. You get hurt, you take him down. Holger sweeps, he takes your back, you get back to the feet, and you take him down one more time before being stood up with just a couple seconds to go. We hit the bell, the horn to end the fight. Rashad, what is your confidence level? Because that third round, you know, you scored a lot of takedowns, but you really didn't hurt him at all. He seemed to hurt you twice. Did you feel like it could be 2-1 Holger on the scorecard?
I felt like I won, but I felt at the same time, it felt as if like it was a lot closer than it was, and primarily because I was hurt. Whenever you actually get hurt in a fight, it actually weighs on your mind, like, did you actually lose? Because, you know, when you don't get hurt, you're like, yeah, I won. I'm not even hurting or nothing. I don't have a bruise. But when you're walking out the fight and you're the one with the bigger bruise and you feel like and you supposedly want to fight, that doesn't feel good, you know? I was just more or less just disappointed because I didn't see the kick. I didn't even see it. And it scared me because it was like, wow, I think I'm so good. But yet I didn't even see that kick.
That's interesting. Wow. We head to the judges' scorecards.
Ladies and gentlemen, after three rounds of action, we go to the judges' scorecards for a decision. Raul Parada scores the bout 29-28, Holger. Len Trowbridge scores the bout 29-28, Rashad. And Marcos Rosales scores the contest 30-27 for the winner by split decision, Rashad
Oh my God. First of all,
I got issues here. All right. Woo! I don't have issues with you winning the fight. I got issues with you winning 30-27 in a fight that, especially that third round, he busted you up.
Oh my gosh, you got a problem with that? Well, I have a problem with the split decision. That should not have been a split decision. I mean, listen, he did catch me with the Kimura, and he did catch me with the kick. But it was a fight of 15 minutes. He did two moves. He did two moves in 15 minutes.
That's fair. That's fair. I wondered that first judge, though. He definitely scored that Kimura. Now, here's the deal. You win. This is a big win. You're in a co-main event spot. You're the tough champion. You back it up. You show toughness. But that narrative of Rashad doesn't finish fighters, it's ramping back up. How happy, relieved, angry? What's your mindset? Because we did not get a post-fight interview because your fight had gone the distance. The broadcast was running long. They came right back with Bonner Jardine after commercial. What's your mindset after this win?
I felt like I lost the fight, to be honest, because it wasn't like even speaking to like Dana and those guys afterwards, like they were kind of like, yeah, you won, but you know you should have finished him, or it just, you know, he did catch you and look at your eye. It was, you know, they didn't say look at your eye, but you know it wasn't as if like they were really happy with my performance, to be honest.
Hey Dana, Holger ain't bad, all right? He wasn't
all. No, he wasn't bad at all.
All right, well, to close the book on Sam Holger, a year later he would make his final UFC appearance, losing a decision to Lyoto Machida at UFC 67. He would fight five more times, going 4-1 in smaller organizations, including the IFL, eventually retiring in 2010. Rashad, he's 39 years old, still living, the native of Baton Rouge, the Alaskan assassin. Have you ever had any contact again with Sam Holger?
No, I have not. You know, I've seen him one time at a fight, and I think he was like, he was working with some fighters. I think he became like a jiu-jitsu coach, and he was also doing like some law enforcement, I believe, but he got a lot bigger. Like now he's like a bigger guy. Like he's, I don't know, like when I seen him, he was probably about 240, big guy.
Interesting. All right. Yeah. Well, you get the victory, and we talk about four fights in 294 days here, less than a year. This second fight is not even 3 months later, Rashad. It was April 6th. You beat Sam Holger. June 28th. You've got a date with Stephen Bonner. Now, talk to me about what was the perception of Bonner at this point. Now, I know he's a UFC Hall of Famer, but to be honest, he's a journeyman brawler, and we love him. He's a Hall of Famer because of his importance to the company, that first fight with Forrest Griffin, Ultimate Fighter 1. We all know that great story. But he hadn't piled up too many losses at this point. What was your mindset and idea of how tough Bonner was going to be at 10-2 entering this fight?
Well, I mean, he was Forrest's equal, you know, and anything in respect you extended to Forrest, you really had to extend to Stephen Bonner, because, you know, there were some people who scored the fight and they scored it for Stephen. So there was this extension of respect that was given to Stephen, and there was a lot of hype given to him, being the potential that he had, because of the fact that, you know, he had the technical skills, but more importantly, he had a dog in him that you rarely see. Yes. and a mentality that was just a promoter's dream, because he was a fighter's fighter.
He was 29 years old entering this fight, 10-2, like I mentioned, the one loss to Forrest Griffin, which could have gone either way. He had an earlier loss to Lyoto Machida when he was stopped under the Jungle Fight banner in Brazil. And he was fresh off wins over Sam Holger. He submitted James Irvin, and then took a unanimous decision on that same card that you fought Holger against Keith Jardine. So he's coming in there. To be honest, this may have been the peak point of his career from a marketing standpoint, from the idea of, is this guy a future title contender? Now, I know he went on to fight Anderson Silva and fail a steroid test. We love some Stephen Bonner on this part, but this is a legitimate test for young Rashad. I don't have the odds in front of me, but I could see easily favoring Stephen Bonner entering into this.
Yeah, it was favoring Stephen Bonner. You know, he was training with Andre Arlovski, and he was also training with Duke Rufus, and he had the more together camp and the more together system and the more together just approach to the sport in general than I did at the time. And, yeah, going into it, you know, I was looked at as someone that he was going to, you know, showcase on. And I looked at it as like, oh, they think that I'm that guy. You know, I felt as if like they felt like Rashad is good and Rashad is tough, but he's just not, you know, he may never be at that level, but we got Stephen Bonner and it'd be good because it'd be a dog fight and it'd be a good showcase for Stephen Bonner. That's what I felt going into the fight, or at least that's what Greg Jackson told me every day.
Fire you the heck up. This was back at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Vegas. Ultimate Fight Night 5, headlined, of course, and we've talked about this in the past on this show, by Chris Lieben against Anderson Silva.
Oh, my gosh.
UFC debut. It didn't take him, what, 49 seconds to dismantle Lieben. You're in the co-main event spot.
Yeah.
Featured fight is George Gurdjieff against Mark Hominick. You got Luke Kumo on this card, your Ultimate Fighter housemate, a little bit of a weirdo. Josh Koscheck, John Fitch buried on this undercard. But this was, I remember, you know, the hype ahead of Anderson Silva obviously coming was big. So this was a pretty big night. I mean, it's a fight night card, but you're positioned in a big spot. This is sink or swim time in so many ways for the potential of Rashad Evans. So I was fired up to watch it.
It is, you know, for me, this was my main event, even though I was co-main event, but this was my main event because nobody really knew who Anderson Silva was. And he was coming in with all this hype. And for me, I'm like, you know, I watched a few videos of Anderson at the time, but I didn't see anything spectacular, to be honest. And I was like, yeah, you know, it's doing pretty good, but I feel like I should be in the spot. And I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to use this fight to show them that this is my spot and I should always be in the main event. So I went out there with a little chip on my shoulder. And I didn't understand how of a bad man Anderson Silva was going to be and is and was until I got to share a locker room with him that day. Ooh. And I shared a locker room with him that day. And I've never seen a fighter warm up or prepare for a fight the way I see Anderson Silva prepare for a fight. Like you see fighters and, you know, they slapping themselves up, they get nervous, they're throwing up, whatever. Like you see all kinds of different things that people do to get ready to go and make that walk and get into the cage, you know, because it takes a lot inside you to do that. But Anderson Silva was something different. I'm sitting there and I'm in full fight mode because in my mind, like I told you where my mind was at, I should be number one. So I'm about to go in there and I'm about to show everybody that I'm going to destroy the Ultimate Fighter because that's what they're referred to as, him and Steph, Forrest Griffin and Stephen Bonner, they're referred to as the Ultimate Fighters. So I was like, I'm going to destroy these guys. So I had that chip on my shoulder and I look over and Anderson Silva is cool as a cucumber. Super cool, super relaxed. Yeah, you know, just talking, and you know.
I love it, man.
Yeah, I love it, man. Yeah, and then here's a kicker. Anderson lays down and he's sleeping the whole time while I'm warming up. And I'm just like, is this dude even gonna warm up? They had to wake him up to wrap his hands. He wraps his hands, he goes back and he lays back down and he's like knocked out sleep. And I'm just like, this is absolutely amazing. Like,
you go back and watch that fight, man. He's basically dancing.
Yes. So
shots and just moving. Oh, all right. So here's set the stage for this Bonner fight. Here's a little sound heading in.
Sam Hover, he was a tough fight. That's what you need because you're gonna meet that adversity, you know, in your fights.
Rashad's a tough guy, and I'm ready for him. I'm ready to destroy him. The last fight. It was a close one with Jardine. I guess I'm kind of like Rashad. I have close fights too.
To beat him, you have to just get down and just get, you know, get on his level.
Fight stays on its feet, then, you know, I'm going to knock him out. But if fight goes to the ground, I'm going to submit him.
I really haven't shown what I can do on the ground. You know, I may look like I may not be able to do anything, but I may got a few surprises.
Coming up next, Rashad Evans takes on the American Psycho, Stephen Bonner.
Rashad, this is another huge opponent. You're 5'11". Yeah. He's 6'4", with a 3.5-inch reach advantage here, and a lot of experience. But we talked about you said in that sound, you'd have a surprise. Once again, your opponent had a surprise. It wasn't Sam Hoger giving you the Stockton slap off the start, but you touched gloves, and like 2 seconds later, Stephen Bonner's doing a step-in axe kick that hits you on the shoulder. Dude, that would have been lights out if that thing connected.
It would have been, because I didn't even see it coming once again. And it was kind of like one of those things like, whoa, I got to be more careful, you know, because it just came out of nowhere. But I kind of expected Stephen to kind of do something a little bit zany, because that's the way he kind of, that's his fighting style. And when he fought Keith Jardine, he did some craziness too in that fight.
Yeah, he did a little craziness against Anderson Silva and got caught big time. Well, give him credit. He was well-tanned and well-abbed up for that fight.
He was. He really was.
All right, let's get into this fight. He misses with that X kick, hits you in the shoulder. You land an instant takedown in the first minute, but they're standing you up quick. That's the theme here. Another big takedown, this time with a slam at the halfway point. No one really landing anything. You catch a kick attempt, and you slam him one more time. And then you start to get in some ground and pound. It seemed like you had an easier time transitioning from takedown to offense against Bonner than you did against Sam Hoger.
Yeah, because what made it easier, because with Bonner, you know, I didn't want to stand up with him at all while he was fresh, you know, because he was such a good boxer. And that's the thing about Stephen Bonner. He had really, really good boxing, and he had really good clean kickboxing as well too. So I knew I was outmatched in the stand-up department. So whenever it got to the point where it was going to be, we're going to have to exchange, I really, really fought as hard as I could to make sure that I was going to make him either contest every takedown and get tired, or I was going to get him down.
Interesting. So you got him down. You land your first successful ground and pound, but then you let him up, which I thought was interesting. Maybe you didn't have the best position, but that led to a big turning point in this first round. You score another monster slam.
Nice inside leg kick by Stephen Bonner, and a big slam by Rashad Evans.
He's taking Stephen Bonner down at will.
You see, what he did there, though, he slammed him, and he went right into half guard. Instead of, like, the jiu-jitsu instinct, which is to pass immediately to get to a dominant position, he allowed himself to fall right into a bad spot.
Is Joe being fair there?
So when he said that I'm allowing myself to fall in a spot and stand in half guard position,
instead of trying to get to pass or get full or go side, or
I mean, in those days, that's what he thought. Like, that's what you taught, you know, you pass the guard and you get in side control and stuff like that. But back then, Greg was teaching us something different. And now you see it more in like guys with Cain Velasquez, and they stay inside of half guard. And it's actually a better position to do ground and pound for, you know, because once you're inside position, you're constantly playing that game of balance and him trying to pop you up. But when you're in half guard, you have an anchor, and he's trying to go into you to gain position. So he has to go into your punches. You know what I'm saying? He puts himself in a way of going into your punches versus you trying to hold him and then trying to land punches, you know?
It's clear that Joe is not upset, maybe disappointed. He feels like you should be able to do more. He followed it up with a quote: Rashad had an excellent opportunity to be in a dominant position there, but he kind of squandered it a little. Rashad, I didn't know if you could hear him, because you responded to that comment with one more slam that ended with you landing some Fedor-style ground and pound that left Bonner bloody. You finally had your breakthrough moment there in the final minute. What went on for you to finally be able to start landing?
At that point, like, as the fight went on, I just felt like Bonner was getting more and more frustrated. You know, Bonner's a very emotional fighter, and I knew if I engaged him on an emotional level, then he'll lose his cool. And that's what you see happening, and that's why I stood up. And I knew I can take him down, because he was getting really aggressive. And when guys get over aggressive, they get mad. It's easier to take them down because they're swinging with more rage. So that's what it made it easier for me to get him down. And the more I took him down, I was just hearing him. He was grunting, like he was making sounds, and I can hear him getting frustrated. So I just kept on doing what I was doing to him.
well, it's clear that you dominated this round. We know a slam, you know, can physically hurt, if not sometimes knock out, if a fighter hits the back of their head on the way down. Does it take a lot out of the person doing the slam, though? Because this is about four recorded slams in this round for you.
No, not if you do it right. If you do it right, their body hits first, and that's what you want to do. Sometimes if you don't slam them right and you want to slam them too hard, you can actually make your body take the impact first before theirs hit the ground. And that's when you see guys get knocked out.
Well, you hit one more slam in the closing seconds to really put the exclamation point on round one.
Let's see if Bonner can engage at all. Right now, Rashad Evans is imposing his will on Stephen Bonner. And Bonner really, if you looked at the breakdown coming into tonight, was the more versatile striker. But round one clearly belongs to Rashad Evans. He finishes strong.
You can
take a look at some of that action from that first round. Here's Rashad's fiance. Look at this big slam by Rashad. Up and boom.
And you could hear the thud, and they flash to the crowd, and the Rashad Evans family is going sick. We got to find out who these people are. The lower third says Latoya Brown, fiance, and she's fired the heck up. Who is the woman next to her?
That was my sister. That was my ex-wife and my sister, and they used to go crazy. Look, my ex-wife would get to the point where it's like she was the kind of woman, like, if I was in a fight, she was jumping in. You know what I'm saying? They would have to go to her before the fights and be like, and get security around her to be like, listen, you know, because she'll get to the point where she'll get crazy. She will fight.
Shout out to Latoya Brown on that. There was one more fella, a tall, gangly looking white guy. I got to be honest, he looks a lot like our podcast producer, Mikey Mormile. Who is that fella? Do you know?
Yeah, that guy was my brother-in-law. Yeah, he was down for the cause too, man. Really.
All right. Shout out to Team Evans there. It's clearly a 10-9 round. We get into round two. You land a nice right hand, but Bonner's crafty. Couple knees start to leak in on you. You land another takedown, maybe a little bit of a slam there, but then you eat a spinning sidekick. This is like Dennis Seaver style to the gut. How much did that take out of you? Because this is the beginning of Bonner starting to assert himself.
It didn't really hurt me too much because I was going into it, and it kind of like almost missed me. But I was prepared for the spinning attacks, and I thought he was going to do a lot more because that's what he would do with Forrest. But we trained it, and he did a lot with Jardine as well too. So whenever he spun, I was supposed to just dart in every single time, just dart in and not give him any ground at all to make space.
That was really all for the end of the second round for Bonner's offense. The announce team assumed you were hurt. Replays after, like you mentioned, show that the kick didn't really land flush. You get another takedown with 90 seconds to go, but I'm starting to see some deep breaths happening. Is Rashad, where's your gas tank at this point, at the end of round two, in the overall scheme of your career at 7-0?
It's getting tested pretty well, you know, because, you know, I wrestle a lot, but to take somebody down like that in a fight, like, that's a lot of takedowns. I don't even know how many times I took him down, but it was a lot of takedowns. To take somebody down that many times in a wrestling match, which is only 6 minutes, would be a lot. So I'm already 10 minutes in the hole taking this dude down like it's my job. You know, well, it is my job, but taking him down like it's my business. And it was getting to me.
All right, round two ends. I got it 2-0, Rashad, and we mentioned your cheering section going nuts. Here's a little clip.
There is Stephen Bonner's brother, Brent, in attendance here tonight. Rashad Evans, no question, Rashad Evans, Latoya Brown, Rashad Evans' fiance. He is fired up.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to see a fight between Stephen's brother and Rashad's fiance.
Watch out for the knee when you...
Latoya going sick right there.
She was going crazy. She was going to hurt somebody.
I don't know what became of Stephen Bonner's brother there, but that dude looked like he was like the bassist for like Eve 6 or something. That guy looked like he was either going to be getting me high or maybe removing my organs.
Yeah, he looked intense.
Rogan closes the round by saying, I think so far Rashad is winning this fight. I had to believe that too, Rashad. We go to round three. Another big slam 30 seconds into it. You're getting some good grounded pound at the halfway mark. You pass to side guard for the first time. You're landing shots. suddenly you're winning Joe Rogan over.
Speaking of dominant, are you surprised at how dominant Rashad has been?
Rashad's explosive. I mean, he's a difficult dude to hold on to. He's very fast, very quick on his feet. And he's got a tremendous amount of heart. I mean, that heart was doubted by, you know, some people after that first fight in The Ultimate Fighter. They thought he was showboating. But you know what, man? You know, first time in the octagon, even on The Ultimate Fighter, people make mistakes. They do something wrong. And he has proven himself to be quite a warrior since then.
And Matt Hughes certainly didn't like the early showboating of the...
Oh, come on. Drop the Matt Hughes stuff.
Hey, he's...
Yo, Joe, you turned Joe around in this fight.
Yeah, I mean, he's slowly starting to turn, but even though, I mean, he's giving me props, but he's still not giving me props on the technical level yet. You know, he's still saying that I'm beating these guys who are technically skilled just on physicality. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's like, no, these guys are bigger than me.
Well, Goldie loves your body. He thinks it's a wonderland. And every turn, Goldie brings back that Matt Hughes story like it's going on his mouth. Just a reminder, Rashad's a little bit of a showboater, and Matt Hughes didn't like it. All right, the horn hits. Rashad, rewatching this, I'm like, you just kicked the crap out of Stephen Bonner. He had that side kick. He had a couple sneaky knees, but it was like 10 to nothing on takedowns at least. You slammed the crap out of him. I thought it's 30-27 on all three, but we go to the scorecards.
Here's Bruce Buffer.
Ladies and gentlemen, after three rounds of action, we go to the judges' scorecards for a decision. Nelson Hamilton scores the contest 30-27.
Okay.
Cecil Peoples scores it 29-28.
All right.
And Dolby Shirley scores the bout 29-29 for the winner majority decision, Rashad.
Shout out to Latoya right there. It's 2006. That's Dolby Shirley, the third judge, who at that point was an old as dirt veteran boxing official.
Yeah,
that's where we were at. Some people think we're still there in 2020, where we have too many recycled boxing guys that don't have an MMA background. This was 14 years ago. What the hell was Dolby Shirley watching scoring that 29-29?
I don't know. And that's the thing. It was, if you watch that fight, it was my pressure the whole time. My pressure. The guy didn't have any really bright spots in the whole entire fight. And maybe he scored like that because I didn't stand and engage with him for too long. I don't know what it was, but we are removed from that extreme in some extents, but at the same time, we're really not, to be honest. You know what I'm saying? We're really not. It was just bad judging.
Yeah, straight up. Let's go to the post-fight interview with Rashad Evans.
Rashad Evans with Joe Rogan.
All right, I'm here with the winner, Rashad Evans. Rashad, congratulations. You had a look on your face. One judge ruled it a draw. Was that surprising to you?
Yeah, it was surprising. I felt I pretty much dominated. Maybe slowed up in the second round, but I thought I had all the way through.
Yeah, I thought so as well. It seemed to be a case of just too explosive, too fast, too much athleticism. Do you believe that?
Yeah, I believe that. After the first minute or so, I was able to get his timing down. So I was able to shoot when I could take that heavy step. That's what I was looking for.
All right, take a look at the replay right now.
I was just trying to get around his butt. So when I picked him up and slammed him, he didn't catch me in the guillotine and try to make it hurt a little bit too and look pretty.
Well, you did a great job of avoiding any submission attempts and dominating all the action. Congratulations. We look forward to seeing you again. Rashad Evans, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, two things from that, Rashad. One, what's with the like Mike Tyson voice coming out of you right there? I mean, I think I feel like to shout back to your impression.
I'm impetuous and my defense is impregnable.
And number two, Joe just can't give you the credit. Well, Rashad, you were just more athletic than him.
Oh my gosh, I know. I think the Mike Tyson came out of me because I watched a lot of Mike Tyson. You know what I'm saying? So after a while, it just started flowing. You know, but yeah, I think it was with Joe. I think it was like. They, you know, because they really had a lot of endearment for Stephen Bonner and those guys, you know, and to
finishers.
See
they still get drunk for finishers today. I mean, there's bonuses built in for that kind of thing.
Right. So that's what it was, you know. It took a long time for me to win Joe over. Long time.
Well, it didn't take you a long time to become a finisher, but this was the last fight on that narrative that we talked about. And mind you, look, Stephen Bonner doesn't get finished that often. So it's not like, you know, and this was the toughest fight of your career. How much were you still hearing, or maybe even your inner self with insecurity saying, am I that badass? Yeah, I'm 8-0, I'm 7-0, whatever, I'm undefeated, but it's going to the cards every single time. I'm like prime GSP right now.
It started to get to me, to be honest. You know, I tried to not let it get to me, but the more I had to answer questions about it, it started to play into my mind because, you know, as I fight and the longer the fight goes, you know, it started to play in my mind like, oh man, dude, how much risk do I take because I don't want it to go into the cards again. And, you know, when you're out there and you're fighting, you're going against a guy who's trying to win too, you know, and it's really hard to risk it all in a position where if you just keep on the steady pressure, you're going to win the fight. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of hard when the result of you gambling and being wrong is an ass whooping, you know?
That's true. We know Bonner went on to, you know, alternating wins and losses a lot to close his career. UFC Hall of Famer, a fun guy. We love him. What's the history of your friendship or rivalry or anything after this fight?
We became buddies, man. You know, I hung out with him and partied with him a few times. Realized I can't really party with Bonner. Bonner's on another level. But Bonner was always a cool guy. You know, he's one of the good guys of the sport and just a genuine guy. You know, funny as heck outside, inside the sport as well too. You know, I think that when it comes to guys that I've worked with in other professional bases, I think that he had a natural ability to be an analyst, but just never really developed it. But he was actually really talented at that too.
All right, we continue this journey. These four fights bursting on the scene, less than 300 days. It was not even three full months later. Is that a normal schedule for a fighter who's young, up and coming, learning quickly to just keep reloading every 3 months? That's like Cowboy Cerrone style.
You know, when I first started, that's what I always wanted to do. I wanted to have four fights a year, and I wanted to stay as busy as possible. I wanted to make some money, and I wanted to I had so much to prove, and the fact that they kept on saying, you know, doubting my skill level when I knew I was good, it just made me want to fight even more.
All right. Well, you get a big opportunity here. Your first pay-per-view card. It's UFC 63, the rematch. Matt Hughes defending his welterweight title against BJ Penn. September 23rd, 2006. We're going to Anaheim, California, the Arrowhead Pond. Co-main event, Mike Swick and David Loiseau. We got Melvin Gillard on there, your old tough housemate. Joe Lozon's on there. You're in the fourth position on the pay-per-view card, the second fight of that main card there, Rashad. How pumped up are you? And what are you feeling about your placement in the company now? I mean, that Bonner win, however you want to slice it, is a big deal.
I felt like this was my debut. You know, I felt like I was fighting in the little leagues before, but this is the first time I was fighting on a big show, and I'm fighting on the card with guys that I want to get their picture and autograph from. You know, I'm fighting on the card with Matt Hughes and BJ Penn, and these are the guys that I grew up watching on TV. So for me, it's just like I've arrived. It felt like I've arrived, and you know, I felt like I'm part of. It felt like it was the first time I'm actually fighting in the UFC.
And you are facing a guy whose name doesn't resonate a ton nowadays. But at this point, Jason Lambert was 29 years old, 22-5, riding an 8-fight win streak. He just stopped Brandon Lee Henkel, had stopped Terry Martin before that, submitted Rob McDonald. This guy was on a hell of a run. He hadn't lost in about 5 years since Chael Sonnen took a decision from him at Gladiator Challenge. His only losses before that had been to household names like Tim Sylvia, Cabbage Correa, etc. What were you thinking about this matchup here against a guy who, for the first time, is basically your size? You've got a 1-inch height advantage, and you guys both have a 75-inch reach coming in.
I knew it was going to be a big test for me, but I felt like it was a good matchup. And like you said, he was my size, so it allowed me to feel really confident going into the fight because I haven't really even seen anybody my size. So to fight somebody my size, I felt confident. But at the same time, I knew that he was very tough, and he had the like an old school veteran fighting style, which at the time was very difficult, you know, because, you know, these guys, they fought in those circuits for so long, and it was before they even were even keeping records, you know. So a lot of these guys, they had fights that they weren't even counting because they fought on Indian reservations or without any place where they had any kind of authority or any kind of commission. So he was one of those guys, and I knew he was tough. So I was like, you know what? I feel like my side, my ability to wrestle is going to come into play, but I know he's going to, I know if he, if I give a little bit, he's going to put the pressure on.
Absolutely. And he was confident coming in.
That he said,
if he's expecting a 3-round grind, he's in for a rude awakening. I don't see it going towards the third round.
On the Ultimate Fighter 2.
And so Mike continues to play the narrative. Rashad can't finish guys, but hey, Rashad's a growing fighter. And Lambert says it's not going to go the distance. He's proven right, but here's Rashad after that fight.
I'm just going to be thinking about putting this guy away. You know, I know I got skills. I know I'm a better fighter than he is. And I know I can put him away.
Coming up next.
Yeah, bring it, Mike. What was that a rallying cry in camp with Coach Jackson that this is the fight we're going to get the knockout?
Yeah, it was kind of like we kind of thought in the Bonner fight I can get the finish, but he was definitely, you know, making it so like we're gonna get the finish, and he also was like he was also telling me at the same time, he said, don't make a big deal about it and don't start to worry about just getting the finish. He said it's gonna come. He said, but you just got to keep that pressure on. As long as you keep that pressure on, you're going to get in a position and you're going to get that finish.
Well, Rashad, a spoiler alert. This is the fight you became a championship contender in my mind. You beat the shit out of Jason Lambert. It started with a nice little hip toss takedown. You land some shots against the fence. You're pushing the pace. Another big slam halfway through that first round. He gets a Kimura attempt on you. And a reminder, this is what almost got you into trouble against Sam Holger a little past the halfway point of the round. How'd you feel about your ability to slip out of that?
I felt really confident when he got me in it, because it felt as if, like, after the whole situation happened with Sam Holger, Greg Jackson drilled the dang Kimura ad nauseum to the point where I couldn't get caught in it in my sleep, you know? And it just became something I became so comfortable to. So when he did, I'm just like, he didn't have a chance.
Well, not to echo the announcers, but the athleticism and explosiveness was there, although the technique was bubbling up along with it. Let's get a little taste of that.
Yep. Good first round by Rashad Evans.
That athleticism is just so hard to deal with. Rashad is so explosive.
You know, you kind of get the feeling with Rashad Evans, if he wanted to play football, he would have been an All-American wide receiver. If he wanted to play hoops, he would have been an All-American point guard. I mean, he's got that type of athleticism, similar to a Josh Koscheck, similar to even a Melvin Gillard, who's going much younger but going to fight here tonight.
And on top of that, he's also got dedication and intelligence.
Thank you.
That's a
Thank
winning
you.
Combination.
Can we give this guy credit and stop just saying, like the other black fighters, he could have been this.
Oh my gosh. But listen, we've come a long way. We've come a long way. And we've come a long way on just even the way we speak about fighters, you know. But as you can tell what was going on here, you know what I'm saying? Like, come on, I gotta have more skill besides just being athletic.
I mean, have we seen your hoops game? Could you really been an All-American point guard?
No, I couldn't. It's terrible. I'm a terrible basketball player.
Luckily, you could fight it. You put it on Jason Lambert here to start round two. This is the beginning of the end. A nice right hand. You get a low single leg takedown. You are mauling this guy.
Again, down low, he goes again. Good, right solid side takedown, control. Side control, and he's got them out.
Very nice.
Plenty of time to work with it here in the second round.
Now, Rashad, you didn't finish him in this, but you go full mount from takedown. We're watching the evolution here.
Yeah, and I felt like I felt as if like I could have done it earlier, but at the point I was just listening to Greg Jackson, you know, just allowing the fight just to come to me and allowing the pressure be the medicine that I need to find that hole to get the finish.
Well, Rashad had worked on finishing and becoming that explosive guy, and you put it on good old Jason Lambert to close this off.
Jason Lambert's taking some big shots.
It's in. Event He's center, gone. And this fight is all over.
Wow.
Rashad Evans finishes Jason Lambert in the second round.
Jason had taken a couple shots earlier. Wow, Jason had taken a couple shots earlier and then finished the job.
Hello, world. I do have the ability to finish.
Whoa, Mike. Let's clean that up for a little bit. All seriousness, Rashad, that was like a schoolyard beating at the end there. What does that feel like in that moment?
It felt so good, man, because it was starting to get to me. You know, as you can tell by the narrative of Mike, you know, that was just echoing around anything Rashad Evans. Can he finish a fight? He's pretty good. He's athletic and all those things. But does he have the ability to compete with the guys at the next level? In order to do that, you got to be able to finish fights. And finally being able to do that, it was a graduation in a sense that I do have the ability to compete with those guys who do finish fights in dramatic fashion.
And like, look, dude, Jason Lambert was on an 8-fight win streak against names. Like, he didn't have a moment in this fight, Rashad.
Right, and that's another thing. Like, that was another thing. It's like if a guy could be good, but if I beat him, then he was just like, he wasn't really that good. That's what I felt like. But you know what? That's the mindset that kept me going, because you're not thinking like that. Yeah, you gotta think like that. It's paranoid and it's crazy, but if you're not thinking like that, then you're not going to be the best.
You need that edge. Let's hear from Rashad.
Here's Joe. All right, I'm here with the winner and star of the Ultimate Fighter, Rashad Evans. Rashad, this is probably your most impressive victory to date. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that, because I got to finish the opponent finally.
And probably your most, it's probably the most difficult test to date. A lot of people thought this was going to be a tough fight for you.
Yeah, Lambert's been around. He fought a lot of seasoned vets in the game, and he's won himself, so it was a big test for me.
Talk us to the end of the fight here.
I took him out, and I just started pounding away. I felt him pushing on my hips, so I was like, okay, there's nothing upstairs, so I just started pounding. And I caught him with one good shot, and I see him kind of, his eyes roll back, so I knew I had him.
Now, Rashad, in your game plan, how far do you think it is between now and when you challenge for the title?
Whoa!
That's a tough question, you know. I mean, it's not like it's some chunks at the title, so I want to take my time and mature my game and my mindset, so when I step up to the level, I'll be ready.
Well, congratulations on your continued improvement. We look forward to seeing you again. Rashad Evans, ladies and gentlemen.
Rashad, they're already talking title for you.
I know.
The narrative right here, you're 8-0, first stoppage, you got some big wins over Jardine and Bonner, but I love that you didn't even take that bait and be like, yeah, I'll tell you what. And I want Liddell. You're like, I'm working on this thing right here.
Yeah, you know, that was the thing that Greg Jackson always instilled in us, you know, and it was just, you know, be comfortable with the process and not try to rush the process and really understand that each and every single fight has something to offer you in way of the total picture of becoming a champion, you know, and I felt like when Greg Jackson became the most famous coach, it was because of the mindset that he instilled in his fighters. You know, he would train us in a way that you see people in, you know, the Marines, you know, the Navy SEALs and stuff do, you know, the kind of stuff where they go on missions and, you know, you may not come back. And he did those kind of things to us in order to make us feel that feeling of, I might not come back from here, because he knew once you got comfortable with feeling that feeling of despair, that very primitive feeling of despair, then there's nothing that a fight can bring to you in a way of fear.
Love it. I love it. I was wrong. You were 9-0 at this point. And a little postscript on Jason Lambert. He bounced back from this loss to knock out Babalu Sobral the following year at UFC 68, winning fight of the night, knockout of the night. Unfortunately, that started a 5-fight losing streak that lost him his job at UFC. He did resurface in 2013, going 1-1 in Bellator before retiring. 42 years old today, a native of Long Beach, California. Any future contact with the Punisher, Jason Lambert?
No, I never talked to him again after that whole situation. I don't think he really liked me, but I never talked to him again after that, to be honest.
All right. We advance, Rashad, to the fourth fight, the last fight before you really began to step up. And this fight is so well remembered because of how you finished it against Sean Salmon. But this was January 25th, 2007, about 4 months after the Lambert fight, UFC Fight Night 8, but it's your first main event opportunity. Not going to lie, you're a big-time favorite heading into this fight in Hollywood, Florida. This feels like showcase all the way. Rashad's a finisher now. He's a potential future title contender. He's got a great personality. Oh, boy, is he athletic, too. Let's put him at the top of a card. What does this mean for a fighter to get this treatment at this point in your career?
It was pretty good. You know, I felt as if, like, you know, my efforts in the Stephen Bonner fight paid off, and they were finally starting to, you know, believe in me and the company. And, you know, and even this, the Jason Lambert fight, I got my first backroom bonus. And that's when the UFC used to go back there, and it was like the mob, you know, they come back there, they'd be like, oh, I want to talk to you. You know, they hook you up, you know, you know, Dana White and Lorenzo, those guys, they were really, really good about that. And they came and they hooked me up, and they let me know, like, yo, you go out there and you compete like that, we'll hook you up like this. So off the heels of that, I'm finally feeling like, okay, I got the juice now. You know, I can do this. I got the company behind me, and they're putting me in a big, important fight because they're launching a new show on Spike TV. So I was, you know, they wanted to have a UFC fight and then keep the viewers from that to launch a new show.
This new show? I'm seeing it on the poster. Rampage's face is on it.
I forget what it was, to be honest, but it was like they were doing a piggyback something off of Spike. I forget at the time.
Pros versus Joes.
Yeah, that's what it was. Pros versus Joes.
And they promised an interview with Rampage Jackson, I guess, on the show or after the
show.
You watch the 8 o'clock fight night card. 10 o'clock, you move over. You get a Rampage interview. You get Pros and Joes. You're the headliner, Jake O'Brien and Heath Herring, and the co-main event, Hermes Franca and Spencer Fisher, rounding out the main card. All three of you share the poster, you, Jake O'Brien, and Hermes Franca, but you get that center point. Do you still have that poster today, Rashad?
No, I do not, man. I think I may have it somewhere, but I think it may be in storage, but I haven't seen it in a long time. If anybody has a poster, let me know.
So this is Sean Salmon's UFC debut. He only ends up fighting twice in the UFC, loses both fights, but he's 9-1 coming in. His only loss to David Heath the previous year under a Fight Fest banner in Texas. What did you know about Sean Salmon? Looking back, it's easy to say he was the lamb to the slaughter. Try to argue that he's not coming into it.
Yeah, he was, but originally I was scheduled to fight somebody else, and he came in at short notice. I forget the guy who I was originally supposed to fight, but he came in at short notice, and there was no tape on him at all. Like, there was, like, maybe one tape on him, and it was, like, a really short fight. It was, like, a minute where he just, like, wrestled and took the guy down. There was nothing on him. I had to resort to watching him wrestle in college to be able to just even have an idea of how he moved, because there was nothing on him.
Interesting. Well, we can't always speak to Wikipedia's accuracy, but there is a sentence in here that originally scheduled for the main card was about between middleweights Nate Marquardt and Dean Lister.
That's right.
Spike TV influenced the eventual decision to remove the bout from the main card. Oh, so the bout still happened. It was the prelim main event. Not a big deal. It doesn't say who your original opponent was. Interesting. But the third highest paid fighter on this card. According to Wikipedia, Rashad, you made $24,000 for this. But Heath Herring, who was, of course, a big-time name coming out of Pride and Hero, made $60,000 for his co-main event slot. You okay with that in hindsight?
I mean, hindsight. I mean, I had to start. You have to start somewhere, you know. Yes. And coming from where I came from, I was just getting off the Ultimate Fighter contract, so that was. I was still on the Ultimate Fighter contract, so that was good money back then.
Clay Guida making five G's on that undercard. Yikes. So we said what we said about Sean Salmon. And look, if you only know this fight from the head kick knockout, you're going to assume this guy sucks. You look at his Wikipedia, you're going to say, yeah, maybe this guy sucks. Rashad, he don't suck. He don't suck. This was an interesting fight. I had no idea that he was lighting you up at times. You know what I'm saying? You don't have the video to prepare for him.
God,
but this turned out to be a little bit interesting. Let's play some sound to lead us.
They say Rashad is a wrestler. They just get ready for me to wrestle him, and then they don't take into account that I have pretty good striking ability. I think they take my striking skills lightly, and I'm very happy to take my striking skills lightly.
Jason, you're actually taking some big shots.
Because I got to finish the opponent primarily.
I'd rather knock somebody out all day. You know, I mean, tapping out is fun, you know, but it's nothing like the satisfaction of seeing somebody lose consciousness.
Yeah.
His bother in leaving isn't really going to help him defend a takedown very well.
I know he's a wrestler from Ohio State, and I know a couple people who wrestled him, and I've seen some of his wrestling tape, so I got a pretty good idea of, you know, what Sean's about.
When I decide to take you down, you're going down.
He's
going
to have a lot of pressure on him. He's just so nervous, you know. He may not be able to – he may get stage fright when he gets out there.
I have a lot to prove. My first time in the UFC against a top-notch opponent that I actually was asking for the fight. So I think the first part of the fight is probably going to be very exciting. I belong here in the UFC, and not only do I belong here, but I belong near the top.
I feel like I can compete with anybody in the UFC in the light heavyweight division.
I've trained for three rounds, but this fight is not going past the first. I'm going to win this fight in the first round.
I'm going to catch him with a big hit, knock him out, get on top of him, and finish him off.
You know what I took from that is Sean Salmon is looking at you as an athletic guy who he can take down at will. Very interesting. They did play up the Michigan State versus Ohio State rivalry. Did you cross paths with this fella before in your collegiate wrestling days?
No, I didn't, but I would wrestle a lot of guys from Ohio State, and I don't think I lost to anybody from Ohio State. I will beat everybody from their team. So I was like, man, I never lost a guy from Ohio State, so there's no way you're going to beat me anyways. You know, that little corny line. But, I mean, he was, you know, here's the thing. So before that fight, he was trying to go after my fan base. It seemed like, and that, because you know where I got that from? I got that from my mama. My mom called me. My mom called me with that narrative. So she called me and she said, Rashad, look, this kid that you fighting, Rashad, listen, he's saying he's gonna take all your fans, Rashad, and he's saying he's gonna leave you knocked out, Rashad, in your own blood, Rashad. He talking cash trash. Rashad, listen, when you hit him, Rashad, keep him hit, Rashad. Finish him. That's what my mom is saying. Now, this is my mom before, at one point, when she used to be like this, Rashad, you keep on fighting, your ass going to end up in jail. Like, that's what my mom used to say. So to hear her come from that to now give me fight advice is quite shocking, you know?
Wow. I love the cash trash comment from Mrs. Rashad. Shout out to that. Another fighter your size, you have a 1-inch height advantage. You have a 1/2-inch reach advantage. And we talk about these fights starting off weird. It's not just the weird standing ass kick attempt from Bonner or the slap from Holger. What the hell was Sean Salmon trying with this weird karate? Let's hear the announce team just straight clown him.
Salmon looked like he's going to try a side kick.
Yeah.
Karate kick there.
Whoa, no. There's no points on that one, Sean.
Oh, my God.
No style points indeed. By the way, shout out to Randy Couture, who I always thought was such an underrated commentator there. But did that throw you off at all when he came out with some kata, basically, against you?
It did, because I knew his stand up was kind of like ugly looking, but when he did that, I was like, what is this? Because I'm gonna tell you right now, a guy who fights like that and does some unorthodox things, they're a lot harder to fight because they catch you because you don't see them moving typically how you used to seeing people move. So they catch you with that. And that's what kind of had me like, oh, man, he's one of these guys?
He was one of these guys. Like I said, we talked about this KO before. He's got a funny name. You kick him in the face. But this first round, dude, nice little crafty counter strikes. He slides by nicely, takes your back from a standing position, and then he takes you down. Buckeyes in the house, Rashad. What's going through your head?
I was extremely frustrated. And remember how I was saying before, like when I fought Stephen Bonham, like the madder he got, the easier it was for me to take him down. Well, that happened to me because he took me down one time off of like a little slide by, I believe it was. And I was kind of like, all right, that felt, then he got me down again. And then it was like, I was kind of embarrassed that he got me down, but I was working on something. Like I was all camp, me and Ali, we trained something, right? Like I was working on like all kinds of kicks and all kinds of like the flashy stuff because I wanted to follow up from what I did to Jason Lambert. And me and Ali would spar every single night.
Are you talking about the manager of the Stars, Ali Abdelaziz?
I mean, yeah, Ali Abdelaziz, yeah. Me and Ali, he was my training partner. So.
Sean, at the end of the day.
That's yeah, exactly. At the end of the day, exactly. So, me and Ali would train, and that's why when I came out there, I was trying to do so much stand up and not really neglecting the wrestling because I wanted to be known for knocking people out.
This feels like when you're playing a video game and you're trying for that, like, you know, Hail Mary play. And then, you know, in the meantime, the other guy's kind of chipping away.
Yes.
You ate a couple elbows on the ground. And like I said, I was not prepared for this. They stand back up. You eat a nice, solid right hand, leaving the clinch. Then a big right cross from Salmon. Did he have some pepper on that steak at all?
Yo, first of all, Sam, he was a lot better than I thought he was. Like I honestly, it was like one of those things where it's like he's remembered for getting knocked out. But what I remember in that first round, I remember how good he was. And I remember thinking like, yo, this dude is like, it was the first time I ever lost a round. Like I felt like it was the first time I lost a round in a long time. And I'm just like, wow, this is just really happening to me.
So you attempt a kick, maybe part of the stuff you're working on with Ali, but he catches it, takes you down again. Oh, he's mixing in punches. To your credit, you work back to your feet. But then the round basically comes to a slowdown. It's almost as if you are mentally resetting, going, okay, maybe we should put that plan out of the way and just get back to winning this. But then a little bit of foreshadowing, Rashad. You come real close in the final 30 seconds to landing the same right-footed head kick that you end up finishing the fight with. Did you guys notice? Was that part of the plan all along? Because when I watched, I'm like, oh, he got lucky there. You just missed.
Well, he's a southpaw, and I knew that he kind of kept leaving his head and hanging his head there. So that's why I kept going for the head kick. And that was something that we picked up on in training camp. Mike Winklejohn and he was working that with me, and that's what me and Ali was working on. We were working on that kick because he was a southpaw, and Ali is a natural southpaw too. So that's what made Ali the perfect training partner. So when I was trying to get the timing for it and I barely was getting it, I seen that he was getting more comfortable. And he was getting more comfortable because he was getting cocky. And here's the thing about it. It was the first time I ever had anybody talk trash to me. He was talking trash to me out there too. Yeah, man, he was talking trash to me. So I remember feeling like
the first time. Cash?
It was like, cash trash. He talked cash trash when I was out there fighting. And it was starting to bother me a little bit. And it was the first time in a fight I actually got mad.
Well, I'll give you guys credit. We didn't get to see the corner audio between rounds because of the commercial break. Do you remember if there was any panic? Because you came out real strong in round two. What was the corner like?
There was no panic. Greg was super calm. He's like, well, get the first round out, you know, got the jitters out. Okay, now let's go. Now let's get to work. And Mike Winklejohn, you know, was on me like, hey, let's get to work. Let's stay to the plan. Let's set up our combinations. Let's pick this guy apart. And I remember going back to the corner at the end of the first round, and I look over and Dana White, his, you know how the table's right there? Well, my stool is right there and his table's right there. And I look at him, and me and Dana, like I kind of know him a bit at this time. So he gives me this look, and I know the look that he's saying because he said it to me so many times in words. And I'm just, I know he's like, bro, what are you doing? Like you got, like you, like he's going like this, like
we actually have audio of his thoughts at that moment.
I can be a fucking bartender, short order cook, a fucking scientist. If that's what you really want to be, then go for it.
He wants finishers, Rashad. All right, he wants finishers. Please.
Yeah, that's what he's saying to me. So I feel the, I feel the pressure of that. And mind you, I knew going into that fight that we didn't have much time to launch the pros versus Joes because they were telling me that it was we didn't have a lot of, like there was not a lot of time in that window, so they were kind of telling me like hurry up.
Interesting. All right. Well, you did hurry up. You come out mixing in punches nicely. You get a little knee to the body that dropped him briefly. And then we start to see you holding that left hand out, almost like fainting, like you know you're about to set up something big. Did you have any premonitions, foreshadowing of what would come, which was that big kick?
No, I didn't. But I felt like he was getting kind of lazy. And I felt as if like what he had the first round, he kind of wore a little bit of it out because in the second round he was a little less springy on his feet. And I think that's what made him so good before is that he was so bouncy. You know how he came out and did that karate kick? He was really bouncy. But the second round he wasn't as bouncy and I seen him kind of like walking a little bit more. So I knew I can walk him down.
Well, you walked him down indeed. I mean, you've had a great career. So, look, I don't think anything's ever going to beat the Chuck Liddell one-punch knockout for the brutality, for what it meant to your career. But if this was if this KO right here was the crowning point of your sizzle reel, Rashad, you would have had a hell of a run because this knockout is sick. You can't play the Rashad Evans career highlight reel without going right to this one.
Rashad Evans. He is still stiff. His toes are still curled up right now. Right in front of us. Let's take a look at that again. Bam! On the button.
Rashad Evans stands low.
On the button.
On the button, yes. Yes. I got three things to say. One, that sound. You heard it. Oh, my God. That's like a baseball hitting a bat. Number two, we've heard great announced reactions to things. Like Daniel Cormier is the best, right? Thug Rose. Yeah. I have never heard all three analysts at the same time screaming over the top of each other. Randy Couture yelled, Jesus. I mean, this was a spiritual moment almost, Rashad.
It really was. And it kind of surprised me because when my foot left, you know how you just like, it feel like it was just a clean swing. And I just knew I got a really good kickoff and it just kind of went off and it flicked so nice. And when it hit his face, it kind of felt like it hit right in a really good meaty area. So I knew I caught like his neck area. And when he went down, my instinct was just to hit him as soon as he was coming up, because when I fought Brad Imes, when I knocked him down, it seemed like him hitting the ground woke him up.
Ah, interesting.
So I wanted to make sure that he stayed asleep. So I was going to go and try to hit him again and make sure he stayed asleep. But he was definitely way, way asleep. And
it's one of the craziest falls, too. His arms went to his side. His chin, like, tucked. It was like he was taking a wrestling bump. He hit on the back, and then, unfortunately, the back of his head hit. And he was out. And when they showed that replay, it was directly in front of the announce team. So they're going nuts. Joe Silva's sitting in the fourth seat of that announce, the UFC matchmaker. He stands up, Rashad, takes the headphones off, and has the biggest shit-eating grin I've ever seen. What's the fighter's relationship to matchmaker Joe Silva? Because it seemed like he was insanely happy you had pulled that off.
He was really happy for me. I think Joe was always one of those guys who rooted for me. You know, he was one of those guys. I mean, and they can't root for you because they always, you know, they got to do what they have to do and they got to be non-biased. But at the same time, I can tell he was always one who was always like, yeah, Rashad, go out there and get him, you know? So to see me go out there and fight and to do that, he was like, okay, because for him, he put the match together, right? So when they get to look like that off of someone, they like, yeah, I did that. You know, they feel like they share in the victory too.
I mean, this is how you build a star. You get the ground and pound knockout against Lambert. You look dominant. Then you come back with this. It's no question that your next four fights were all against basically Hall of Fame level guys and champions there. I mean, look, what can you say? This is a badass moment.
First head kick, Rashad lands in the UFC, and what a doozy it was.
Yeah, what a doozy it was, Joe. That's a weird comment. But Rashad, what does this do to your confidence? Is it too much? You come back, and we're going to go over these fights in the future, but you come back and have a draw with Tito after this. But if you're that age, you're basically 27 years old. You just went from a security guard at a hospital to now a guy who's a full-time fighter, and now you're like a badass. Were you drinking the sugar juice after this? I mean, what's going on here?
Yeah, I was pretty high on myself, man. I was like, you know, everything was starting to come together. You know, I felt as if like at this point, you know, my wrestling game was on point, and I felt as now my stand-up game was coming along, not only with my hands, but now I had confidence to throw my feet, and that offers up a whole nother wrinkle that you can bring to a fight. So I felt as if like my skill level versus everyone else's was finally starting to level off, and I felt as if like I could compete with those guys before, where I felt as if like they got this and I don't have that.
I assume it put you into a new, you know, tax bracket, a new level of life. Did you start to feel like it's time? This investment's paying off. Did you change houses? I mean, what's going on in the personal life at this point?
Yeah, I did. I started to move up. I bought a house, and I started to move and expand life. You know, me and LaToya, we got married at the time. We had our first child. And we were starting to move in that direction, and life was great. You know, life was amazing. You know, I was fighting from a good place. You know, and I would go away to do my camps, and my mindset was just about fighting.
Interesting. You end up fighting Tito Ortiz next. We're gonna go over that in the future, but you get a co-main event spot on that pay-per-view. But according to the California State Athletic Commission, you only made $16,000 for that Tito fight. He made $210,000. How are you going backwards here?
Because that's the UFC. That was the Ultimate Fighter contract. It was 12-12 if I win, and then it was 16-16. But since that was a draw, I only got half of the purse.
Wow. Yeah, you guys are – I mean, when you – you know what? I'm going to say it, Rashad. No wonder why we have the pay system the way it is, because you guys fight so hard to get to that level where you're quote unquote made, where you're a championship level guy, a pay-per-view headliner, a guy. That's why those guys don't complain. That's why those guys aren't fighting so that the guys on the undercards can get paid more, because when you finally get to that point, I assume from this head kick knockout that, okay, Rashad's, you know, he's next in line almost for a title shot. He's got to be making, I mean, if this was boxing, you'd have been making about 700,000 for that Tito fight. Like seriously, straight or 500,000. Yeah. So it's wild. I know that this is 2007. UFC wasn't in a place financially they are now, but now I get it that UFC takes care of you when you get to be a made man. And once you get there, you know, you're not trying to rock the boat anymore. You're trying to, you know, keep cashing.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. Like they make you, you have to earn your keep, and you have to earn to prove that you're going to be a good earner with them, or you were a good earner with them, because you know there's a lot of fighters, and there's a lot of they're a company where it doesn't take a lot for them from a promotional standpoint to make someone a star. So in order for them to really pay you what you deserve, you have to go out there and be that extra and show that you warrant that, you know. And only way you're doing it is if you climb up that ladder and knock out those guys.
Wow. Postscript on Sean Salmon. His only other UFC fight was 4 months later. He was submitted by Alan Belcher at UFC 71. He went on to a journeyman career that lasted all the way through 2013, but unfortunately lost, it looks like, close to his last 10 or 11 consecutive fights. He was once he made it to the Olympic trials of amateur wrestling. He owns a collegiate wrestling win over Bobby Lashley. So the guy, you know, had some decoration, had some skill. He kind of kicked your ass in round one, all things considered.
He definitely kicked my ass in round one.
He's an amateur wrestling coach today. But I doubt after a head kick like that, you guys are trading Christmas cards or anything.
Yeah, I never talked to him again after that, to be honest. It's funny because I never talked to him again, but forever we're going to be intertwined, you know, and I just wish him well in life. And he, you know, for what it's worth, he did kick my ass that first round.
I'd like to get him on this show. I should have done better. Got him right now. Let's go to Sean Femm and celebrate his one moment, you know. But
he definitely had his one moment against me for sure.
Cool. And then that was it. But shout out to Rashad. We call this, of course, episode 2 story time, but it's about bursting onto the scene. What would happen next was you become a part of that scene. Like I mentioned, Tito Ortiz, Michael Bisping, Chuck Liddell, then the title shot and the victory against Forrest Griffin. We'll be very interested in going down memory lane of that. But at this point, 27-year-old Rashad Evans, 10-0, on top of the world. Not a bad time. Not a bad 294 days you put together there. Like I mentioned at the start of the show, you went from raw pretender to now legitimate. Watch that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I felt this, that whole growth in those 200 and something days, it really made or break my career just on a mental basis. You know, I felt as if like that forged what I was going to be in that time, you know, and it felt as if like, because I stayed so busy, it felt as it was just an extension from the Ultimate Fighter, and everything that I had from the Ultimate Fighter just rolled over. And what I accomplished in those 200 and something days really became the foundation of what I was to become the rest of my career.
And by the way, back to the comment you made after the Lambert win, when they were talking about potentially a title shot, and you were like, well, hold on, it's not like there's chumps in this division. Can we just be honest and say chumps? That, I mean, I think right now in 2020, UFC lightweight is insanely deep. But light heavyweight at the era that you came up, I mean, just look at those fights. You had to fight Tito, Bisping, Chuck Liddell just to get the title shot. You also got Forrest Griffin, Lyoto Machida, Shogun Hua, eventually John Jones, Rampage Jackson. There's a reason why that title was changing hands every 6 months during this time. I mean, what a damn time to be alive. No wonder all of you are Hall of Famers, essentially, from that stretch.
Yeah, you know, it was a great time because we were all around the same age, you know, and that's what made it so competitive. But the thing that made it also interesting is because we were all around the same age, but varied in different skill levels based on experience. You know, when they brought the guys over in from Pride, it just added a whole nother element to the whole landscape of the light heavyweight division. Right. And that light heavyweight division was the premier division because there was the most money to be made in that division, you know? And, you know, those guys in that light heavyweight division at the time, you know, it was savage. Those guys were savage. They were not any boys at all. And they despised the fact that they looked at me as a boy coming from the show. And they're like, you know what I had to do to get in this position? Now here you are coming here from some, you know, weak show trying to get all this, you know, everything that I've worked my butt off to get. So they came in there with a chip on their shoulder against me.
And it certainly speaks to John Jones' greatness that he was able to end up going on that run.
Oh, my gosh.
All of you guys basically back to back to back. I like to debate random things sometimes. And the other day, I think I was talking to our producer, Mikey Mormont, just basically saying, look, what if John Jones never existed? What would that title lineage have been? I feel like you would have been a champion like 2-3 more times during that stretch. You guys would all just continue to pass it to each other. I mean, it was a wild time, man.
It really was, and I can definitely see that happening, you know, just because, you know, when John Jones was that mold breaker, you know what I'm saying? He had the attributes that really broke the mold on so many different areas because he had physical attributes that put him in a different realm than the rest of us, you know? And it would have been funny to see how it would have been if we all would have just stayed competing against each other, because we were all pretty equal.
Absolutely. Let's close with the post-fight interview after the head kick. This is a what a time to be Rashad.
We're here with the winner, and winner in devastating fashion. Rashad, you came into this fight saying that you wanted to get a knockout because it was more satisfying. How satisfied are you now?
I'm pretty satisfied. I'm not still satisfied that he's still laying there, but I'm satisfied, and I'm just very thankful for it.
Well, it was a beautiful head kick. Did you set him up with a leg kick, or did you plan on going straight to the head?
I plan on going straight to the head. Me and my tight coach, Michael John, worked on that all camp, and he said it'd be there for it. And I knew I'd catch him with it.
There it is on the big screen. Talk us through it. Here it is.
I just catch him, lean him, and I knew I had it. And I threw the kick. I knew he was getting tired, and I just had him.
All right, Rashad, congratulations. Devastating performance.
Yeah, I'd just like to dedicate this win to a friend of mine who passed away, Nicholas Ivis, and, you know, God with you.
Congratulations. Look forward to seeing you again. Rashad Evans.
Rashad, I wanted to close with that because it shows the humanitarian side that we know and love of Rashad Evans today. You'd concerned for Sean Salmon, and then you shout out your late friend here. What was the story with that?
Yeah, a kid I grew up with, you know, his friend and my mom are really good friends. And, you know, he was battling and going through some cancer. And I would, you know, talk to him on the phone, just kind of give him a little bit of just hope. And, you know, he would tell me how much I inspired him, and he would cheer me on. And he told me he'll be watching me fight. And he never got a chance to make it to see the fight.
We saw you didn't come out there saying, yeah, man, and Iceman, I'm coming for you. You continued to build, and the success came. Can't wait to continue down this journey with you, Rashad. Thanks for the time. Thanks for opening up the vault and taking us back there. We saw Bonner's crazy-looking brother. We had the Rashad cheering section going nuts. what a fun time that was back in the, you know, oh, in that fertile time, UFC becoming a pay-per-view brand, becoming a, you know, a thing again. It was the Spike era was wild. It was great.
It really was. And you know, that's the funny thing, that when we go through this, is the fact that, yeah, we're watching my career and we've seen everything unfold from my personal perspective, but we're also watching the organization grow. And watching how they grow as a production, and where their focus is, and how they're bringing the athletes to the table. And you start to see this big machine that is now the UFC today, but in its infancy stages, you kind of see, you know, Dana White with the hair, the Joe Rogan with the hair, and you're just reminded of where it all started. You know, it's quite amazing, man. And I thank you for going down this memory lane with me.
You shout out to our listeners in the State of Combat. It is UFC 249 week, so Rashad and I, of course, will be back with a full preview. We're gonna have some big time interviews with some fighters on this card. We got Cowboy, we got Pettis, we got Stipe handicapping that must-see heavyweight bout, which could produce the next title contender. But that is all for now. Fights are back, but we had a little fill here in your quarantine season to keep you fired up for the Hall of Famer, Rashad Evans, for our super producer, Mikey Mormile. It's your boy, BC, with two words. We out.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.